This is the Morning Crossfire on 92.3 Nigeria Info.
Good morning. Okay, the roads are a bit busier this morning than it has been the last 2 days. It's Wednesday, back to work Wednesday, 4th May 2022. Journalist, we work every day. Doesn't matter in the rain or in the sun, we're here to serve. And we're here. Good morning. Thank you for staying tuned. Hope you had a happy holiday. My name is Eno Ogbevire, and this morning we will be talking press freedom. Yesterday was the World Press Freedom Day, and of course, the president says the federal government remains committed to freedom of press, pledging to continue ensuring the protection of the rights and privileges of journalists and the lawful performance of their professional duties. He also urged media practitioners, to reflect on the need to embrace the best professional standards and practices, especially in the build-up to the general election. Said the freedom of the press and their responsibility is as important as the sanctity and will of Nigerians expressed through the ballot. Now, the National Human Rights Commission also had something to say. The Executive Secretary, Tony Ojukwu, was telling Nigerians, the society, to see journalists as the oxygen of democracy and agents of change and development. He said today, many journalists struggle with several things. My guest is here, Ndume Green. He's a journalist and also CEO of Capital TV and Ogoni TV. Good morning, Green.
Good morning, Eno. Thank you for having me today.
All right. Green has done this for decades, so he's the right man to give us some insight into what it is to be like, to be a journalist today. According to the National Human Rights Commission, says many journalists struggle with several things, you know. Ndume has been on the field, and he will tell us exactly some of the struggles that he has heard, seen, and also experienced. Ndume?
Thank you so much, Hena, for having me. It's World Press Freedom Day. It's a great day for every journalist, something that takes us back to memory lane and helps us, you know, to look back at where we've come from as a people, as a collection of journalists all across the world. We've continued to face more attacks as journalists in several countries, not just in Nigeria. Even if we have a very peculiar case in Nigeria, we've had close to 200 journalists facing attacks in the last couple of years, and it says a lot about us. We have situations just like in one of the recent cases of Abba Jalingo in Cross River State, where, you know, he was arrested and, you know, put in jail for a very long time. It took public outcry for him to be released. I think there are a whole lot of issues that we need to talk about, but it doesn't just also boil down to, you know, press freedom. There are other issues too that has to do with journalists, especially with regards to the newsroom, that is also very important that we look at, so that we don't just look at those who attack journalists, but external factors. We also look at the internal factors. I think that a conglomeration of these issues and the analysis will help in ameliorating or setting a better, you know, foundation for journalists to operate across the world in
Nigeria.
Right.
Okay, we'll get into that. But let's start with the burden and the responsibility of journalists. Burden of journalism and the responsibility of journalists.
Well, our burden mainly has to do with informing society. We are regarded as members of the fourth estate of the realm. When you have the judiciary, you have the legislature, you have the executive, journalists also are part of the system. Our role today has become broader than it's supposed to be, because the moment the challenges in the society increases, then there is a higher burden on journalists to perform better, to give more information. And of course, the advent of the internet has made the responsibilities of journalists even more complex than it used to be, because we had the laid down rules of who is a journalist and where he should practice, But today, you have a situation where people who have access to mobile phones, have a Facebook or Twitter page, call themselves journalists, even when they do not even know the ethics and the rules. And then you have a series of abuse of the, you know, the ethics of the profession, and people no longer following the rules. And then there is also a very big challenge, the propagation of fake news, which has also become prevalent today because of access to internet. It's a whole...
Is it really access to internet or lack of censorship?
Well, I would say access to internet because... Yeah, that's also part of a lack of censorship, because the internet cannot be controlled. You cannot control news on the internet. And so anyone can just come up. Internet news, or let's say internet, is not properly regulated across the world, not just a Nigerian thing, you know. And so it doesn't just end there. Platform owners too have become a challenge to free speech. You saw what happened to Donald Trump, the president of the United States of America, yanked off. You know, Facebook.
Well, was that a case of free speech? Because, you know, this thing they talk about, free speech. Well, is that really such a thing?
Idi Amin, the former president of Uganda, he said that there is freedom of speech, but what he does not know exists is freedom after speech.
Mm.
And that is particularly to journalists.
Yeah, but didn't that also affect Donald Trump? Wasn't that what affected him, freedom after speech?
What was his offense, actually? Through that he was actually, you know, posting certain information that were questionable, but you need to hear his side of the story. It's also important to put a balance. I'm actually not a supporter of Donald Trump. Everybody knows that. I don't support. I didn't want him to be president. I felt he was too erratic, and for a country like the United States of America, they did not need a president that didn't have even the slightest bit of diplomacy, you know, in treating people, in handling issues. I mean, look at the occasions he had with journalists in the White House. You remember the one he had with the CNN journalist and shouting down. I mean, Donald Trump was the president that would single journalists of a couple of platforms out not to speak at White House press events because he had issues with the media house. CNN, for example, he labeled CNN as fake news network. And these things were quite disturbing. But again, if you are creating platforms, you need to understand that people should air their view. And so long as it is not fake. And people felt most of the things he said, you know, about, they were at a point, they were flagging almost all his posts.
Yeah, but Twitter has, they have rules.
Yes.
Even if they're not censored the way that you think that offline journalists should be, mm-hmm. you know, or journalists should be, mm-hmm. they still have rules.
Mm-hmm.
And if you flout the rules, I mean, that's what happened to President Buhari now.
Mm-hmm. No, the president's case is different, because the president felt that, you know, the sovereignty of Nigeria was threatened by the activities of Twitter. And of course, he is the president of this country. It was basically about the NSAS case. And they felt that people were using Twitter to cause a rebellion. Don't forget that there have been rebellions. The Arab Spring, for example, started on social media.
It was escalated by social media.
It would never have happened without social media. Don't make a mistake about that.
Maybe on the scale it did.
Yes, because what happened was that people were able, you know, to organize, to put together an organized protest system through social media.
Yeah, so now you're looking away from the real issue. The real issue in this case is that people had something they weren't happy about that the government was doing or failing to do. And that's it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That we're looking at the Nigerian situation and why and how Buhari came into the picture. That, I mean, I do not support, you know, anything that has to do with attacking the press as a journalist. Yeah. But I'm a patriotic Nigerian. I'm a nationalist. I see the sovereignty of this country as something that all of us must protect. And I used to say that, like during the NSAS protest, a lot of people attacked me that I did not speak in support of the NSAS protesters. And I said, look, what they were doing was right, but the point where it got into violence was the point that I did not support, that they should destroy public property, they should destroy government property. I was against it, and I spoke vehemently against
it. You know, there's some contention there. Some people are saying that it wasn't the NSAS protesters that did that. Carried out the destruction.
Well, we wouldn't want to talk about the NSAS protest here because it's a very, very controversial topic that we are not going to finish speaking about if we begin. Because you look at the fact that the protests did not have any organized face.
Okay.
You compare that to the Arab Spring and how there were leadership in the Arab Spring. There were people who were coordinating some of the protests across the country, not just in Tunisia, not just in Egypt, you know, cutting across to other parts of the Arab world where these things happen, even in Sudan and most recently.
All right, so censorship is a major challenge, especially with online, you know, media. But also locally, how do you perceive the censorship? Do you think it's stifling for the media? Do you think the media is really free? As much as it should be allowed to.
Well, I would like to pinpoint most of my conversations here to social media, because in the last 5 years, most of the challenges that journalists have faced have been with regards to social media. You must not take away the fact that journalists go the extra mile to get their stories. And in a country like Nigeria, I read a report 3 weeks ago by Africa No Filters, and Nigeria was cited as one of the countries that has very little support for journalists, very little salary payment system, very little compensation payment system, no insurance policy for journalists, especially those who are exposed to risk. And these are very critical issues, you know, that we have to look at if we really want to look at the matter holistically. But again, let's zero down to Nigeria and the issues at hand. We are doing very badly in terms of press freedom in this country. We must accept that. You know, governors still feel that if people write things against them, they should go to jail. And our justice system is not even able to protect them. You know, I mentioned the case of Abba Jalingo. There are a whole couple of cases. I think there was a journalist that went missing about 2 months ago also.
There was one in Abuja. It was last year. I think it was later found dead.
After many months. And these things should not be happening. I practiced in Accra, Ghana for a long time. I started my career as an investigative journalist. And I remember a very popular one. I'm trying to remember his name that worked with a popular investigative journalist, Anas Arimia, that was traced, tracked down to his house and shot dead for publishing a story. And it happens. It's all over the continent. So it's not just an African thing. It's a global phenomenon. But what is most important is that as a country, journalists should be more protected, and there should be a more organized, you know, pattern that helps to protect the rights of journalists to practice wherever they are.
Let's talk about the society, because many times, okay, the journalist actually is a person standing between the government and the people.
And the people.
How would you say the society treats journalists? Do they treat them as badly as the government? Do they blame them for the government's woes? Do they drag them when they should be dragging the government?
I think that there is a problem. I keep saying that there's an internal problem.
Okay.
Because if you don't pay journalists well, then they are susceptible to being used.
Somebody will pay them.
Somebody will pay them. You go for an event and the brown envelope thing pops up. And this is, that's the truth. A journalist that receives 20, 30,000 naira a month will not go for an event and reject a brown envelope. And you and I know that some of these brown envelopes are very tempting. Mm. In fact, I've been to occasions where the brown envelope is in dollars. and we're not talking about $100 or $200. We're talking about $1,000. I have a friend of mine from Al Jazeera that went to interview a popular Nigerian governor. And when she was leaving,
thank you for coming.
The thank you for coming was almost $50,000.
Yeah, but what, is that inducement?
and then said,
thank you for
coming.
That's fine.
No, probably. Probably because, you know, and then she said, no, sir, I don't. I said, no, this is a culture in Nigeria. This is how we receive people. Take it. And then her team members, they were Nigerians, I said, madam, you have to take this money. If you are not going to take it, let us take it.
you know, media organizations like that, they have a caveat. You shouldn't take anything.
No, she refused. She rejected it.
You shouldn't take anything from...
What she wouldn't tell me was the fact that maybe the team members went to take, but she ended the story there. But it says a lot that if we want to actually, you know, have absolute control of our storyline of the media, then it goes down a lot to how journalists are being treated in the newsroom. And how about then? It's the kind of country where we found ourselves. You know, what are the incentives for journalists? We had you travel outside. You know, you see grants, you see organizations, they are giving money to journalists to do stories. You write you do your story deck, and then you access your funding and do your story. So the burden is not entirely on the news house to even pay the journalists, to even help them grow. There are avenues. I think that on a day like this, we should advocate that banks and corporate organizations, in order to protect journalists, because journalists do a lot of work for them, you know, to propagate, you know, to share some of their information and make sure that they continue to remain relevant as brands, should come up with platforms that can enable Nigerian journalists access funds within the country to do good stories, whether investigative stories, you know, whether expository stories, any kind of story that will help to, you know, make them a bit independent in terms of how they're able to share their stories and propagate them.
All right, Ndume Green is my guest as a journalist and also CEO of Capital TV and Ogoni TV. There also is the matter of media ownership and how it influences the level of professionalism or slant of a media house. Talk about that in a bit after the commercial, and also the matter of investigative journalism. We're Nigerian for Stay tuned.
We take off with the biggest conversations with an exchange of opinions and ideas on the Morning Crossfire. Settle you into your day when we say hello, Port Hackett.
Take you on a ride to the sunny side of life.
Hover a bit while picking at the details on hard facts. Take a detour through the exciting world of sports.
And get back on track with Let's Talk.
Land you safely as we chit-chat into the morning on Chat Station.
Chat Station.
And then do it all over again on your number one talk, news and sports radio station, 92.3 Nigeria Info.
This is the Morning Crossfire on 92.3 Nigeria Info.
Thank you for staying tuned. We're talking press freedom. Tuesday, May 3rd, was World Press Freedom Day. My name is Enoch Beverly. My guest is a journalist, has practiced for decades, and he's the CEO, Capital TV and Ogoni TV, Ndume Green. Good morning again.
Good morning, Enoch. Thanks for having me again.
All right, you have questions or contributions, tweet at NigerianInfoPH. If you're on Facebook, we're at NigerianInfoPH. If we can, we'll take phone calls. Otherwise, on Twitter at NigerianInfoPH, Facebook at NigerianInfoPH. You have questions, you want some clarity on something that has to do with the work that we do here, or a journalist, you know, generally, feel free to join the conversation. All right, let's talk about media ownership. A lot of people have said he who pays the piper dictates the tune, and that on its own colors, you know, the views of the journalists that work in such media organizations. Print, radio, TV, online.
Okay. So now, media ownership, platform owners are very critical in terms of news dissemination today. There are lots of them springing up today. I keep mentioning social media because social media has come to be sort of a game changer in terms of news dissemination, in terms of news platform and all that. Previously, you need to have your TV first, you need to have your radio. But now you just
make the effort. Get the
information. But now you are not making the effort.
It's coming
Put on your data, and you have, you know,
flooding
an ocean of it flooding into your space, and you're like, and then so it's important. And you have situation where now, people who have money want to own news platforms.
What do they know?
Nothing. I talk about Elon Musk, who has just taken over Twitter, which is one of the biggest news dissemination platforms in the world.
Yeah, that's Twitter. But locally, what do they know? What do you think they're going in for?
Locally, I mean, when one they want to have access to, they want to have control of news, they want to have power, like what Malcolm X said, that the media is so powerful it has the ability to change an innocent man into a guilty man and a guilty man into an innocent man, and that's an enormous power, so much power, and so they want to control, they want to own this, what you say. I've seen journalists who say, Malgasi make we no air that story, oh. After they are done with it, because there were times when I was running PR for some corporate organization. So we'll have this journalist come and trying to put out information in the press. And they say, sir, my oga say, make we not run that story. Say, it's not... It doesn't fit. Or the person, someone involved is their friend or something and all that. And so you kill what was a fantastic story. Mm. It's just dead. You understand? So it's a challenge. It's a big challenge that people just want to own media houses to control narratives. And now every politician out there wants to own a TV station. They want to own a radio station. If you go and check, and this is fact, you realize that 85% of the media houses in Nigeria are owned by politicians. I don't want to mention names.
Okay, so I checked and we have 260 radio stations. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they've been updated, but online in Nigeria, 260. Mm-hmm. And we have 36 states, which would mean that... we're not talking about the government station that is, you know, has a network. We've 36, so about 7 per state average. Mm. In Port Harcourt, we have about 22 now. In Port Harcourt,
yeah,
and 22. Only Port Harcourt.
And have you investigated their owners?
Okay.
Interesting, isn't it?
Okay, let's stop there. So you've done investigative journalism. Much of it in the course of your career. We get calls sometimes, investigative journalism, they're not doing it anymore in this country. Do you believe that? Yes. Would you agree with
it's almost non-existent. There are just few platforms that have taken it seriously, like Premium Times, the cable, and a few of them. Capital TV, of course, we're going to be doing a lot of investigative journalism because the owner is an investigative journalist. It's risky, you know, it's risky in our country to be an investigative journalist because you don't have protection. Mm. I was attacked in 2019. I still have the marks all over me. A crime syndicate, a border smuggling syndicate tracked me to Nigeria and almost killed me.
From outside?
Yes. Not just, they were not Nigerians, but they had a Nigerian collaboration too, because I had investigated the Semakrake border. In fact, not just the Semakrake border, but the whole flank of the Lagos to Accra route of the ECOWAS border. And the ECOWAS had spent close to 19 million euros to build a border, and they had refused to open the border because the illegal routes aspect of it was giving them more money to the custom and the gendarmes. And so I felt it was bad. I had used the route a couple of times and I decided to investigate it. So we planted it. I wouldn't want to say here. But at the end of the day, the border was opened and we mentioned names and they went down. And somehow...
They came for you.
They came for me and I was lucky. I mean, it was just God.
Do you think that... Okay, so you've mentioned there's no protection, right?
No protection.
And funding.
Yes, no funding too. Of my story was funded. Was funded by an international organization.
Yeah, and see where it got you.
Yeah.
So if there's no protection, there's no funding, what about the media houses themselves? For example, you find something interesting and you follow, you know, that you follow the money, you follow the story and you get it out and something comes out of it, something of this sort.
I think that one of the things that I am trying to do in Capital TV is to broaden conversation on media sponsorship. Story sponsorship. I just told you here that corporate organizations need to step up their game because you don't expect government to do it. And we are setting up an NGO arm called the Wakanda Media Foundation. What we want to do with the Wakanda Media Foundation is to access funds for journalists globally and locally. So a journalist can, who have a good story, can pitch with us and walk into our space and get funding for their stories. Because we must agree that this is the most populous black nation on earth. And it is very, very important that the media continues to play a very critical role in how this country evolves. Mm. We are into an election year now.
We'll get to the election part of it, the responsibility and all that.
So back to it's risky. I actually stopped doing investigative journalism in 2019.
Why?
Because of the risk involved.
Okay, so media houses, for example, you follow a great story, you get all the facts, and you put it out there, then there's something happens, you know. Do you think media houses, as you know them, would stand behind that kind of person, or perhaps maybe for a bit, and after a while they're like, see, you're in your room?
Well, the truth is that a few media houses are beginning to wake up to the responsibilities of that. I don't want to mention names because I don't want to promote any media house except my own.
A Nigerian folk. Nigerian folk.
Okay. Well, a few media houses are doing that. Of course, we must commend Nigeria Info because a couple of times I've been here to do training of your journalists, and that's commendable. But they're waking up to that responsibility, but more funding is needed. Very limited funding. And of course, if a company, even it happens in my platforms, there are times they will tell me, Oga, want to write this. I say, don't write anything about that person for now. Hold on, because these people they are patronizing you. It's difficult. I must accept the truth. It's a very difficult terrain. If we begin to have the kind of money we have, maybe I will take down some of these people. But then, for now, it's a very, very difficult thing. You have for a new media house like us, we just set up in January, and you have over 7 people, and you want to have a quality delivery in terms of what they are churning out there. I have some of the most fantastic journalists working with me, and you want to pay them well. And how do you pay them well for a new media house, for a startup? So it's challenging. But then there are media houses now that have started accessing funds, you know, from the global market, and because, you know, they have been within this space of media independence for a long time. During the military era, for example, it was a big risk to even try to... you have some of our best brains in the journalism sector going down the drain because of their stories. Delegiwa is one of the most prominent ones and all that. And so from 1999 till 2022 has afforded us the opportunity to look at this. But I think that organizations like the NUJ needs to actually come up. It's not just about press freedom. We need to begin to diversify our thinking into how we can access funding for journalists. That is not just buying the newspaper, you know, advertising in the newspaper and all that. Traditional methods of income for revenue for news houses. We need to broaden the conversation, begin to look outside. How do we do this? How do we access, you know, corporate organizations to do that? Unfortunately, it's a bad market for people in Port Harcourt because all the corporate organization headquarters are in Lagos. And so sometimes you write to the Port Harcourt people and they say, we have to talk to Lagos and all that. Mm. But then it's important that we call on those ones that are here, or companies like the LNG who have, you know, their base here, and a whole lot of others in the oil and gas sector, that it will cost nothing for them to support journalists, to come up with funding opportunities for journalists and media houses who have credible stories to access and then put it out there.
All right, 0817-923-0002, 0817-923-0003, 0817-923-0009. You have questions, it's time to call in. Let's talk about the security forces and their relationship with the media.
Security forces they've had some of the most horrible statistics with journalists, because if you go and check, you discover that close to 55% of the attacks on journalists are carried out by security forces, and it's a very bad thing. They don't respect journalists. In crisis areas, for example, if with just your press tag hanging on your neck,
you're covered.
You don't even need. I remember during the COVID period, for example, and as a journalist, I tried to go around the city of Port Harcourt to give live updates, and I had several confrontations to the police with my press tag and everything.
What were they saying?
And they were like, "I say, hey, make you day your house, make you not get COVID."
And they're outside.
And they're outside. And I'm like, if we don't tell people what is happening, everyone is just... Why I even came up was to take that risk was that I felt everyone was just shut out of the world. Nobody knew what was happening. There were some of the streams that I got almost 10,000 to within hours. And it showed how much people were eager to know what was happening outside there. You know, so, I mean, you don't just shut out the world, because the moment you shut out the press, the world is empty. Nobody knows what is happening. If you shut down all the TV stations in the world today, shut down all the media platforms in the world, I don't think we can live like that, the way we can function properly as humans.
David is calling. Please get straight to the point, David. Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Eno.
You're on.
Yeah, thank you very much. I indeed observed a minute silence for those who have departed us, those gallant journalists. May their soul rest in peace. Now, having said that, for me, freedom of the press is a sine qua non to good governance. Freedom of the press is a sine qua non to democracy. So whatever thing that will trample on or stop freedom of the press, I think I will not be a party to read as a member of the Civil Liberty Organization.
All right. Thank you.
And more so, let me also say this, Madam Eno, that insurance policy, better insurance policy for journalists is also a sine qua non to good journalism. Because most of the journalists I have seen, as a friend of the media, a lot of you people are not insured by the companies that employ you people. So let it be mandatory that for you to own a media house, you should also be ready to provide insurance policy for your workers.
All right.
Good morning, ma'am.
We've not talked about salaries or talking insurance. Good news is in Port Harcourt Town. Please put off the radio. Good morning.
Well, good morning, Mr. Good news from Port Harcourt. My brother, I greet you.
Thank
you. I think you're one of the best brains I've met recently. Last time we met at the presidential, I think you're one of the best brains. Keep it up. I want to ask two questions. Number one, you suggested if we can get sponsors of stories
from the private sector and NGOs.
By NGOs or private sector. Who have the heart. Now, you know, generally, social energy, those are big weights. Yes, they can do the things that any start shaking. But people who have interest in a particular story and they know that there's an investigating journalism in that matter and people want to kill it and they don't have something. They want to fund. They have the mind. What do you think, how do you think they can benefit from investing in supporting such fundings? That is one. And number two, don't you think that it is imperative that the media, the journalists, should set up a kind of a media press system that will bring in the leadership of the state of the nation or where they stay, like the IG of police, the commissioner of police, the chief army staff, the senior president, just bring them together, not just the general police people, and talk to them, because those people that will enforce all that, there are people here to the journalists, there are people that can enforce and deal with the presence. Don't think it's important this issue comes up. My name is Good News. Thank you.
All right. And the final one from Boria Country is there. Good morning.
Good morning, my dear sister. Yes, I just want to wish you a World Freedom Day, Press Day.
Thank you.
Where we are, you know. Yes, there is no society that exists without the press. Even the draconian, dictatorial, monarchical, or whatever system of government that operates without the freedom of expression. Recently, we saw the clampdown of media, particularly the other one that was banned by the federal government of Nigeria. That is what government has been to clung to censors the activities of journalism, free press in the society. And I want to point out here, in every system of government, even in the military, we have somebody who is in charge of information management of that of ministry, either police or army. Why is it that those of us who are journalists mounting the PR minister of that particular area do not inform and educate their sector about how media do operate? But to me, this morning, I want to call on every sector, including even the devil, that they should respect the journalists.
All right, thank you. That's all we can take. Ndume, you want to start from the last thing he said. You know, sometimes we have these great media people, we have them at the national and local levels. They were all that, and then the government comes in and they employ them to do PR. And then
the Garba shows.
We don't know them. We don't know them anymore. We don't talk anymore. What happened?
We don't talk anymore. Okay. Interesting. You know, that, the truth is that the way the media is structured, it cannot eternally say you practice till you die. As greater opportunities come, it's just like the issues of life. Greater opportunities come, you move to the next level. So that's what happens to these
people. But so when they move to the other side, do they stop being journalists? Do they forget?
It's rather
a different job description. Is that what it is?
It's rather unfortunate that that seemed to be the situation, you know, in Nigeria. You have situations where people who move to that next phase or that other phase of their career seem to forget that they were once journalists. They no longer have respect for journalists. They no longer treat journalists well. They just feel that now they have the hammer, they have the dagger, they have the nail, they have the gun, and they can just put it on anybody, including people that they were once part of. I think it's rather very unfortunate and despicable. It's something that should be condemned.
All right, Goodies was asking about being able to get funding, you know, and I think some other person said being able to calling the hierarchy, top hierarchy officials in different parastatals and government, maybe to talk to them. But don't we talk every day?
We do.
Are they listening?
And that's what we're doing now. We've been talking about.
So how can someone who wants to do an investigative piece benefit from, you know?
There are lots of opportunities. There are lots. In fact, almost every day, these opportunities are there online. I think, but it takes a lot of training to understand how the process works.
And that's part of what you think the NUJ should be doing?
It should be doing. I remember I had a funding one time for something. Green, how did you do this? And I'm like, but this is an internet. These opportunities are there on the internet. But of course, it's quite difficult to get those funding when you have not even achieved anything on the field. Because most of those funding opportunities come with, let's see your work.
Tied to your work.
What have you done? Share a link and all that. And then that's when it becomes difficult for you to scale through.
So even if you have a good story, you must look for a place to publish.
You must look for a place to publish.
You must be able to write well.
And publication is not a challenge anymore because most of these grant organizations or grant bodies, now they are tagging both TV, online, radio, newspaper to the same thing. When I came up as a finalist of the BBC Komla Dumo Award in 2018, it was as an online, just through an online publication. I had left TV since 2014, you know, and I came as a finalist, one of the top three out of 500 journalists in the continent. I was almost going for the crown.
And you messed up there. Let's take Andy's question. Oh, he's left the building. So elections around the corner. Let's look at how journalists can ensure that, you know, they're professional in reporting and throughout the process.
Well, it's a very complex situation that we are in. The 2023 election is not just a regular election. It's a transition election. An election where the baton of government is going to be handed over to an entirely new set of people, new set of governors, new set of House of Representatives, so it's a very, very, very dicey one. But I think that media houses need to start preparation of journalists to cover it. And it's one of the things that we want to do in the Wakanda Media House Foundation. But it's important that journalists are well equipped to know how to handle the situations that will emerge. Because over and over, we have situations where we lose journalists during elections. And I think it should not happen again. If we put our acts together, we're able to organize ourselves properly, I think we'll have not that we will not have any of those situations, but it will be very limited in terms of the kind of conflict that comes up, in terms of casualties, you know, that we have as journalists. So a lot of training will need to be done. But again, trainings are expensive before you gather 2 to 3 persons to come and train, except you have a relationship with some of these people to come on. It's not free.
Subsidized.
They had to subsidize it. They will charge you and all that. So I think this is where, you know, some of the like I keep mentioning, the NUJ would need to come on board to see how they can take part in training journalists, you know, to get prepared for the 2023 election, because it's a very, very critical election in the history of this country. If this country must move forward, we must agree. I'm not condemning anyone, but we must agree that things are not right.
Okay.
And that things must not remain the way it is, and that journalists play the critical role in bringing in this government. And if we must fix things right, it means that journalists will also play a very critical role in bringing in the right kind of government.
All right. We've got a comment here from Mr. Creative. He says, Ikaka, okay, I'm a press person, but because of the danger, I decided to make a swift move into writing scripts for Nigerian movies. But the fact remains, the nation needs to look into this, being private or public. It's a necessity. Thank you, Dumegreen, for your time.
Thank you.
My name is Enoh Gbeviri. Good morning.